The Monty Show, Thursday, September 6, 2018. NFL kickoff. It's opening night in the National Football League. Hi, Jake.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Wow, you got that mic dial.
I don't control that. That ain't me. That's you, you know. That ain't my part of it.
We got a lot of National Football League to talk to you about tonight. The best teams in each conference. There's a lot of football stuff going around. The impact Le'Veon Bell is going to have on the Steelers, I think it's significant. And there's one head coach who I think could make or break a playoff potential team in the AFC. We'll talk about that as well. Francisco Mejia has two home runs tonight for my, our, and we, your San Diego Padres. I'm hesitant on how do I package my feelings on the Cubs? Because they're losing.
Same as you ever do.
They're losing to Washington. And I know what you're going to say. Oh, come on. Come on. Come on. That's what you're going to say. That's a direct quote, I think, from the show
it's
the other
verbatim,
day.
Verbatim, you know. It sounds exactly how I said it.
Make sure you find us online, themontyshow.com. Make sure you find us on Twitter, The Monty Show. Anywhere you get your podcasts again today. Again, he will remain nameless, but somebody DM'd me and asked me how much the podcast costs to listen to. Folks, this is a free podcast. I would never charge you. Do you realize, and you probably don't even realize this, August was the biggest month. This past August, 2018, was the biggest month this podcast has ever had. And it's powered by great sports fans who don't pay a penny to listen to this show. And we would never charge you a subscription for this show. I wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
So it's free. Wherever you get podcasts, we're everywhere you want to be. We're in the iHeartRadio app, SoundCloud, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, you know, wherever you are, that's where we are, The Monty Show. M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. Yeah. By the way, thank you so much for listening to this show. August was massive. Last week was the second biggest week that this show's ever had, and this week's already trending ahead of last week. So I really appreciate that you guys take the time to listen to this show on a daily basis. So without further ado, young Jake, let's start talking the National Football League. So right off the top, if I said to you, let's start with the AFC. If I said to you, who do you think are the best teams in the AFC? Because I've got one that I think is probably going to piss a bunch of people off, but...
What else is new?
We have a lot of San Diego listeners, so I apologize ahead
of
time.
What else is new?
But who do you love in the AFC?
I'm loving on the Jags this year. I think I love all the trash talking Jalen's done in the offseason. I think he's still got a ton to prove, and I really like them more this year because I think Tom Terrific is, you know, they as a club are not going to be, you know, the dynasty club
the
they've been. Yeah, the Patriots. I think there's – I'm not saying I'm not saying there's going to be some huge fall-off, but they're not going to run away or win some ridiculous amount of games.
Well, I agree with you because I was looking at the Patriots' schedule today. I don't see – I think 11 wins is the top of the mountain for the Patriots this year. There's just so much going on there, I feel like. And I know we've talked ad nauseum on this show over the last few weeks about Tom Brady and the trainer, Alex Guerrero, that whole thing. And we said yesterday he wants to play five more years. At some point, that all goes away. At some point, Tom Brady falls off the cliff. And that's just my opinion. You're getting to a point where you can't play this kind of schedule. And I love what you said about Jacksonville because I think they're going to win 13 games. And I think a lot of that is... Calais Campbell. I love the fact that he got out of Arizona. I think that's critical to his career. But speaking of guys, how long they can go, I mean, we talked about this in our pre-show meeting where we sit around and talk about what we're going to talk about.
Behind the scenes.
But I think Calais Campbell's a really important guy for them.
Yeah, you know, if Calais Campbell can give them the contributions he's been giving them, you know, or putting up, you know, last year and in years past where it's, 14 and a half sacks, you know, ton of assists, you know, causing fumbles. If he can be that disruptive player for them, I think they're going to be in great shape. With that said, I'd love to see that because, you know, as a not a huge Cardinals fan, that
unnoted
would just be
Arizona Cardinal.
You know,
hater.
That would just be icing on the cake for me. But look, I just think you know, the Jags have a lot to prove. And I think they're that younger team. Not that Calais is young, but I think they are a young gun team ready to go.
Well, I think a lot of this is about Blake Bortles. I mean, that's what this will be, because this defense, as you talked about, I think the Jags defense is going to be really good. I also think that, you know, you have a guy in Blake Bortles who they haven't seen the best of. And I wonder, not to go back, but again, I wonder if they let him throw the ball more in the playoffs, is that a good thing or a bad thing last year? I think it's probably a good thing.
I think it's probably a good thing as well, because, you know, with failure comes learning, comes progression, comes results. And so he really should be at a point where, you know, if they, you know, whatever seed they get in the postseason, whenever he gets to that moment in the postseason, he should be able to execute this time around and not fail.
Boy, that's interesting. I love the Jags. I like their defense. I think the Patriots win 11 games. I think the best team in that division and in that conference, I think it's just the LA Chargers. I do, which is still, by the way, it's still really odd for me to say the LA Chargers. I am not a fan of the Spanoses. If they never win another game, I would be totally fine with that. You know, frankly, I just think what they've done and how they've gone about it, and
it's awful.
They frustrate me, but boy, I think they're going to be very good.
Yeah.
And they're a team, again, what are the hallmarks of really good teams? Great quarterback play. And I think when you look at the Chargers, of course, they have really good quarterback play. And they're playing in a tiny stadium. They're always going to be the third, fourth, fifth team in LA. They're never going to be everybody's darling of Los Angeles. But I think they kind of like that.
Yeah, and I think Rivers is due for a breakout year, finally. I mean, we've been talking about this two, 3 years. But I think now, finally, he's at a point where he's got the weapons around him to execute and to go out and actually, you know, have big games.
But without Hunter Henry, who was a huge loss, I think that's one. And now this Joey Bosa situation where he has another foot injury and it looks like he's not going to play this week. I want to say that they're going to win 13 games. But they can't go through this injury thing again.
The carousel.
Yeah, especially when we're talking about how good the Jags are. You know, the Steelers, I think, in the AFC, frankly, they're one of the more compelling conversations in the AFC. What does this Le'Veon Bell thing do to them? AB comes out today and completely supports Le'Veon Bell. Like, he's the guy that stepped out of the locker room now and has said, this is my guy.
Well, of course it's his guy, because AB wants to continue to get paid. And, you know, guys who get paid need to support other guys who want to get paid. And so I think I'm not surprised by that. And being that Antonio Brown is one of the best receivers in the National Football League, he can afford to do that. Because, by the way, your success as a team hinges on his ability to catch football.
Absolutely.
So he's got the cojones, the ability to come out and say that. So I'm not surprised by that. But what did you just say about successful football teams? They got to have great quarterback play, and you got to have weapons around you. There's a big question mark at quarterback, in my opinion. I mean, I think
really, Ben,
oh, for sure, because I think he at some point you want to not complain, but talk about Brady getting older. Brady's not even the guy who plays physical football. Ben Roethlisberger is a guy who always is hurt with something.
He's always getting hit.
Always. Something. And
doesn't it seem like he's dragging guys?
Yeah, for sure. He's always playing on one leg. He's always got a bum shoulder. There's always something, you know?
The shoulder thing,
yeah,
perfect.
You know,
yeah.
Like, there's always something. And so I just say, at some point, when does that catch up to you?
Well, it's going to catch up quickly, because if you look at their September schedule, I mean, if you look at their first four games, what stands out to you? Well, you have the Chiefs, and you have the Ravens there, and you have a team in the Browns that are going to be go-getters on defense.
I was just going to say, I mean, I think that's a bruising first four games. The Browns, I hope you've watched Hard Knocks, because I've loved it. But, I mean, just what we've seen on Hard Knocks, they're a physical defense this year. And I think they've got more than enough to go and get after you.
And Tyrod Taylor actually is an upgraded quarterback for the first time in how many years. They have a legitimate guy.
He's not even Tyrod Taylor's not even a guy who's elite, right? He's not awful. He's not constantly turning the ball over. He's not, you know, some, you know, just scapegoat back there. He can actually get the job done for you and actually get it to Jarvis Landry or whoever you want to go to.
Yeah, and they have the Browns twice in the first 2 months. I mean, they play him again on October 28th. But you look at, they're at the Browns, Chiefs, at the Bucks, Ravens at home, Falcons at home, at the Bengals, Browns, at the Ravens. Then they play the Panthers, the Jags, the
and there's just not like, really a break. Schedule. Like I would say the Bucs is the quote unquote easiest team to play, and that's not even
without
an easy
Jameis
matchup.
Winston, by the way.
But
so
still, but
that
even
helps.
Without Jameis, I would even go as far as to say that Fitzpatrick gets the job done for you. At least he can deliver the football. You know, I mean, yeah, he might not have that special playability, but as long as somebody can deliver the ball and turn around and hand it off, you're in okay shape.
I can see the Steelers winning 11 games. They're not an elite team without Le'Veon Bell. And if he truly sits out into the second half of the season, they're done.
Yeah.
Because I think the AFC, for you know, all of the depth and all of the quality in the AFC, I think there's a lot of teams that are going to be on the edge of making the playoffs. The Titans are a great conversation. What about Mike Vrabel? You know, he has this team that you feel like should be really good. You've got a quarterback in Marcus Mariota who you think can make plays for you, who can lead your locker room, you think. You know, he played big-time college football at Oregon. So you feel like this guy should be good, and you just wonder.
It hasn't happened yet.
And they're not as good as Jacksonville.
Oh, I don't think it's – would you – I think the conversation on the quarterback is interesting because Bortles, to me, will turn into that guy. He will turn into a dynamic quarterback talent.
Wow, really?
I think he will because I think he's got the arm. I think, you know, you look at the mistakes he made, you know, and those are rookie mistakes. You know, the throws he made were not good ones.
Yeah,
you
certainly,
know?
He makes a lot of young guy mistakes.
Yeah,
but
you know,
it's at what point is Blake Bortles not a young guy anymore?
This year, he's not a young guy. He's got to show it this year.
Yeah, I agree with you. But see, and this is the Mariota conversation. Mm-hmm. Frankly, this is the quarterback this is. You know, like we've seen it from Derek Carr, but I think Derek Carr has a lot to prove. Mahomes. I mean, there's all kinds of guys around this league, and you ask yourself, where does Blake Bortles fit in on teams? Like, who else could he start for? Because I think that's a very small number. Now, if you're going to throw me the Cleveland Browns, well, yeah, of course, because I think he's better and more dynamic than Tyrod. But yeah. if you look at his numbers from last year, his numbers don't stand out to you as spectacular. You know, like he throws too many interceptions, and maybe this has to do with the fact that they're not a dynamic offense. They've had some real misses at wide receiver in the draft. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know, but I feel like he has to be better for them to excel.
Oh, there's no doubt. There's no doubt. I mean, any club that's going to go out and win the AFC. I mean, you really have to have good quarterback play. You've got to have that. You got to have the ability at the end of the day to come out with 3 minutes or 2 minutes left in a game and say we're down by three, but we're going to go and get a touchdown and win the game.
But what is Blake Bortles? What do you know about Blake Bortles? Well, he's durable. He plays 16 games a year, but he's never had a year where you're like, wow, this guy's a legitimate quarterback.
Yeah. Well,
you know, this is a fifth year guy now.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. You're 5 years in. Your fifth year, you really should start to take off.
You had better take off. So I agree with you. So I like the Titans are really interesting to me. And I think Mike Vrabel's that one coach in the AFC. If he doesn't fall into the rookie traps of being a first-year head coach with a team with expectations, if he doesn't make those mistakes, if Vrabel can just be a guy who holds on and I'm trying to preface, I'm trying to be kind, but I feel like he, when you come out of the Belichick coaching tree, because ultimately that's where he's going to be linked back to.
Yeah.
I think expectations are very high.
Well, for good reason. For sure. Really good reason. I don't think it's unfounded expectations. I think you sit under a guy like Belichick for that long, yeah, you better win.
Yeah, and I also look at the South, and I think they're the second best team. I think Jacksonville is clearly better than Tennessee. And the reason I say that is Tennessee did go out and get Malcolm Butler, so their defense is upgraded. They did go and get Deion Lewis. By the way, where did those two guys play?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they were both New England Patriots. And I think it's interesting that Vrabel winds up being the guy that will now work with Malcolm Butler. Those two obviously know each other.
Yeah.
So I think that's a good fit. But I need to see it.
There's no track record yet. I mean, you can't be a great coach until you've actually been a great coach. Like, you got to go out and do it.
Yeah. I think the other team that we haven't talked about are the Houston Texans. And it's interesting, I think, and this is just my opinion, J.J. Watt, let's count on J.J. Watt for 10 games.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I think Watson stays healthy. But your big-time off-season free agent is a guy with an injury history.
Yeah, for sure. Tyrann Mathieu. I mean, the guy got a contract that he didn't deserve, that he should not have gotten in Arizona. And I think that's where I just say, boy, this guy seems like a big name, seems like a very talented guy, plays the way that Polamalu did at safety, like very physical little guy. Always seems to be in the right place.
Very physical little guy.
That's what he is. He's a pest. Like, he's not some physical freak. The guy is just an athlete. He can run. He can really play the ball. And I think that's what makes him elite when he's on the field.
Yeah,
that's the problem. He's got to be on the field. That's his biggest problem, his health.
Any chance the Colts can be something more than a 5-6 win team?
I think that's really pushing it. I think for anybody who tells you that Andrew Luck is, you know, just going to come right back to who he used to be before sitting out for forever, you know, I just don't think that, you know, he's going to do that. I mean, when you're hurt that long, when you miss that many snaps, there's rust. Then on top of that, you're going to come back, you're going to get through that rust, and in the back of your head, you're wondering if, you know, your body's going to hold up because it hasn't, frankly, held up.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say. Do you believe that he can stay healthy? Now, there's a lot of people who question the commitment. Pat McAfee, I thought, had one of his best podcasts ever last night. He talked about, I guess it was two nights ago, whenever, this week, Pat McAfee told the story on his podcast of how he retired. And what happened was, Pat, who, when he retired, was the best punter in the NFL.
Baller, dude.
He got called into the principal's office, which is the general manager. And the general manager of the Colts says, I'm going to fine you a game check because you took a picture in a football area inside the facility, which apparently is a no-no. Pat took a picture of himself standing on top of an equipment box in the Colts facility. And one thing leads to another. They have a huge fight. And Pat says, F it. I'm out. Go ahead. Take my entire game check. I'm done. I'm retiring. And he walks out of the room. He's like, I'm out. And it was an ugly scene. But as part of that argument, McAfee said to him, the biggest issue is not me taking pictures in a football area. The biggest issue is you don't have an offensive line to protect your quarterback, and you're building a team around a quarterback who can't stay on the field. Like, McAfee essentially told off his general manager, stormed out, and retired. Now, that's probably not the right way to handle that, but I think it exposes a greater issue in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
And I think McAfee's got a lot of credence there that I don't know that I'd be building a team around a guy who can't stay healthy because you won't protect him.
Yeah.
I think that's a huge problem, and I think it's a very good point, by the way. I think it is a very good point.
Yeah, I mean, listen, all the best teams have good protection, good quarterback, at least one wide receiver who's a star, and a bunch of other guys who can get the job done. I mean, that's really the setup we're talking about here. So he's exactly right. How are you building a team around a guy who's had a rocky history because you've put him in that place, frankly? You know, like, you can't blame Andrew Luck. He's the one taking the beating, so how you can't blame him for that. You know, but he's exactly right. I mean, if you're going to say that Andrew Luck is going to be, you know, your franchise quarterback, he's going to be the one to take up Peyton Manning's mantle, frankly, you know, as somebody that puts the Colts back on the map, he's got to stay healthy.
And I also, speaking of teams that have to stay healthy and things to prove, I think one of the more intriguing teams is in the West of the AFC, and that's the Kansas City Chiefs. Because with Mahomes taking the reins from Alex Smith, this is a big year for him. And this is his first year. He's going to have to prove that he's a big-time quarterback. You know, they, I think, will need to prove that they can score 28, 32 points a game to contend in that division. And I think Eric Berry has to stay healthy. You know, there's so much change on that Chiefs defense. without Marcus Peters, without Derek Johnson, obviously those are two huge subtractions from that team. And I think the jury's out on Andy Reid. You know, I think I'm hesitant to say that Andy Reid is rebuilding, because Andy Reid never rebuilds. But this feels like a reload job, especially when you consider that you have Phillip Rivers and Keenan Allen and Melvin Gordon, and like you have a team in LA, you know, that Antonio Gates is back there now out of necessity. You have a team in LA and the Chargers that I think are very good. And while they do have some question marks, I think they can win 13 games.
Yeah, I mean, I don't care what your question marks are. If you're capable of winning 13 games, you're a pretty good club.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I mean, the question marks
the
are pretty
small. The Bosa thing scares me. The Bosa thing, it scares me, man. It is, he's a big part of their, he's a big part of their defense. So anyway, not to go backward, but I'm just saying, I think they could be very good. Let's get to the NFC, because I know that you are a guy who, you went all in on the Minnesota Vikings, young Jake.
Mm-hmm.
Are you comfortable with that? Like, how good are the Vikings? Hey, listen, where are you at with that team?
I think they're going to win the North. I think from a, you know, if we're talking from a realistic, like just a football sense, yeah, I mean, I think that Kirk Cousins obviously is going to have to stay healthy. They need to execute big time. I mean, they can't have, this can't be a year for Kirk Cousins where he's, you know, 4,000 and just average.
Trying to figure it out.
It can't be just trying to figure it out. This needs to be pushing, you know, 4,500, like let's get close to five. And, you know, figure out what your run game is going to be. Is Dalvin Cook going to be legit or not really? I don't know.
Boy, that's a good question.
I can tell you what. There's a reason I drafted Kyle Rudolph, because tight ends and Kirk Cousins' offenses do work. So we'll see. We'll see what they are. No, I think the biggest question is, can they execute in the red zone?
Absolutely.
Can you execute in the red zone? And I think that's where Kyle Rudolph will come into the picture, because at the end of the day, you know, he's going to do what every other big tight end in this league does. You're going to get a couple receptions each drive. You're going to bruise the secondary. And then you're going to get to the red zone, and you're going to have an awful matchup. And you're going to, you know, take advantage.
Well, Thielen and Diggs proved to be big-time players last year. You know, my question is this. So you had a situation where you needed a fluke mistake by the Saints defense to get you to the NFC Championship game. Now, Diggs makes a great catch and makes a great play, but he should have been dead to rights, right? And the safety missed him. Williams missed him.
Yeah.
You were able to do that without Kirk Cousins. I think this is a team that should take a huge step forward with Kirk Cousins.
Yeah.
You brought up Dalvin Cook, which I think is a great point, because you have to be balanced, but they've got three legitimate receiving targets and Dalvin Cook and a pretty good offensive line, and now you have a weapon at quarterback. How, in my opinion, how do the Vikings not win the North and win 13 games doing it?
Yeah, and I think specifically in the North, when you look at you know, the idea that this is not a warm weather division. You're going to get a lot of cold games. You're going to get a lot of, you're going to get that time at Lambeau where it's snowing and it's a rough game. That's where Dalvin Cook and Rudolph come into the picture.
In Chicago,
exactly. But I think when you're up north in the dome, you know, that's Kirk Cousins' land. He will light it up in that dome.
I think it makes a huge difference.
Yeah, and I think he's proved, by the way, for a guy that has done this at outdoor, at home in an outdoor stadium for the Redskins, if you put him in an indoor stadium, imagine what he's going to do. I mean, I just think he's set up for success. And I agree with you, they should win the division for sure.
I'm curious how the Bears-Packers game goes this week, because I'm not sold on the Packers. Aaron Rodgers is a great football player.
I'm sold on him being a great quarterback.
Yeah, I get it. That defense has got to prove to me that with Pettine there, that, you know, like, you've overhauled the staff again. You have talent in the secondary now. But that Packers defense has to prove that they can do two things. Get after the quarterback, and when they do, can their secondary create turnovers? Can their corners and safeties catch the frickin' football? Because if the Packers create turnovers and you give Aaron Rodgers extra opportunities, if you can create short fields for Aaron Rodgers in that offense, they're deadly.
I mean, I think if you give any NFL quarterback short fields, you're in great shape.
Jimmy Graham is a red zone target. I mean, that to me.
But Jimmy Graham's got to wake up. I mean, this is not – his time in Seattle was not great, in my opinion. His time in Seattle was not the time he spent in New Orleans.
This is a proving ground.
Yeah, so, I mean, again, the whole idea that, you know, well, maybe, you know, he took a step back, you know, from Drew Brees to Russell Wilson. I don't know that I agree with that, but, you know, at the same time, Aaron Rodgers is arguably the best quarterback in the league. I mean, that's an opinion-based discussion, but he's right there. He's top three. There's no excuses. Catch the football.
Matt Patricia's in Detroit for one of the worst defenses in the league. They were a bottom five team last year defensively. They struggled to stay on the field. They bring in LeGarrette Blount to play goal line short situation. Who knows how much he'll actually carry the ball. I think that'll be interesting. Matt Patricia, I think there is some real question marks about him. Now, obviously, his character with this, you know, he had some gnarly, you know, sexual assault allegations way back in his past that came to light. He's left all that behind, but Matt Patricia is another Belichick guy.
Yeah.
Who's got to prove that he can do this. Because there's not, by the way, is he Josh McDaniels or is he going to break the mold of Belichick guys who haven't been great head coaches? Patricia's there to do one thing, create the best defense in the NFL. That's what the Lions hired him for.
Yeah.
And I don't know that he's going to do that, and I don't even know that they'll be the best defense in their division, because I think they're going to be a 6-win team. By the way, I think they're going to be a 6-10 team.
I mean, anytime you go into, you know, even if you look at Vrabel or Patricia, they're both in cities that are a little bit lower on the totem pole. So I think when you look at, well, will they be successful? They've got time to be successful.
I think Vrabel in Tennessee has a lot of pressure to win. I don't think Patricia
They were an exciting team last year. I mean, they weren't a Super Bowl contender, but they were exciting.
They were close to they lost a lot of games they should have won. Mm-hmm. A play or two here or there.
Mm-hmm.
Mariota's health obviously was a big deal, but I think the Detroit Lions can miss the playoffs and Patricia's going to be fine, unless they're a 2-14 team or whatever. But I don't think that's going to happen with Stafford. The Chicago Bears are now very interesting because you have a defense that should be top 5 total defense in the NFL. And you add Khalil Mack, and again, this is why I say this week one Packers-Bears game, how many snaps does Khalil Mack play? Because he's not in football shape. He's in phenomenal human being shape, but he's got to get himself in football shape.
He's got to get in game shape.
Yeah, stamina-wise, you know, physicality, and he's a guy who needs dexterity, flexibility. He's a guy who needs a motor. That doesn't just show up because it's week one.
Yeah.
This Bears team has the potential to be one of the shocking teams of the NFL. If Mitch Trubisky and that offense, if Tarik Cohen can be a guy that gets, I would love to see him be a 10 to 12 touch per game guy for them. 10 would be the bottom for me. I'd love to see him get 11, 12 touches a game, because he's going to give you a touchdown a game if he gets those kind of numbers. By the way, he's on your fantasy team.
Mm-hmm.
But if Trubisky's able to get him the ball and Howard's able to effectively run the ball and they're able to make plays on the outside, because they have a bunch of dudes on the outside that are, you know, there's a lot of questions about them, and Allen Robinson and you know, Trey Burton, who a lot of people don't even know who Trey Burton is. Well, he's the guy that threw the touchdown to Foles in the Super Bowl. So you've added two legitimate receiving targets for Trubisky, and you have a Swiss Army knife in Cohen.
Yeah.
And you have Howard.
Yeah.
As a Bears fan, I'm really excited about that defense and the potential tools you have offensively.
Yeah, I mean, I think the defense, it's at least this year with the Bears, this is a year where we're not just fixated on Trubisky. There's actually something else to talk about.
It's Mitchell, please.
You know, so I just think that I like the Mac signing from the standpoint of it makes them more exciting. And then I think that kind of is the cherry on top to completing the defense. So if they can get off the field, I think they'll be fine. You can't give Cousins, Rodgers, Stafford, you can't give those guys extra plays.
The most compelling division in football, who is it in your mind?
I mean, I think it's the NFC West. I think when you look at the Rams, you look at Mr. Garoppolo. I think it's a good division.
Are the 49ers better than the Seahawks? And I think it is.
It's close.
So here's a question that sounds ridiculous on its face. As soon as I say it, I almost don't want to say it. Is Jimmy Garoppolo better than Russell Wilson? Because if you project forward, schedules, health play a big part of that, I get it. But if you look at the change that's happened in Seattle, you know, you lose guys like, again, you mentioned Jimmy Graham. You lose Paul Richardson. You look at how much is too much for a quarterback like Wilson to carry. And then you say to yourself, well, what do you have in the 49ers? And the biggest problem is you lost Jerick McKinnon. And that there's no way around, you know, the knee ligament tear, like he's done for the year. That's a huge, huge problem. But you still have guys on that offense that I think can help you. And I think Jimmy Garoppolo is a really good quarterback. And I do think if you said to me you can only have one of those two guys, Russell Wilson or Jimmy Garoppolo, I'm probably going to take Russell Wilson, but boy, I got to think about it. I need a minute to think about that. It's just not knee-jerk. Yep, Russell Wilson's better.
Well, no, but I think total package Russell Wilson is better. I think he's given you – and I know that Garoppolo's been on the bench for a lot of playoffs games. You haven't been on the field. You haven't gone out and made the throws, you know, and I think that's a big difference. It's a big difference. And so then I say, okay, well, what are we talking about who's better? What has Russell Wilson had to do?
How many games has Jimmy Garoppolo lost as a starting quarterback?
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, you got a no-hitter in the third inning. I get it. You know, like, I just think...
I was kidding, though.
Wilson has accomplished more, and he's done more, and he's shown he can actually play. Garoppolo needs to go and do that.
Yeah. Well, and I agree with you on that. I think the offensive line's going to be a little bit better. You know, obviously, we're going to have to figure out what their defense is like, but if everything breaks right for the 49ers, and obviously losing Jerick McKinnon is not a breaking right.
No, that's breaking wrong.
They could win 9-10 games. I think they could. Now, what does that get you in the NFC West? Well, that gets you a distant second place finish.
Yeah,
because
first loser.
I personally think the Los Angeles Rams are very good.
Yeah.
Are they as good as the Vikings? I am not a believer in Jared Goff. I think those are two of the best defenses in the NFL.
I'm surprised to hear that.
The Vikings and the Rams are two of the best defenses, right? And the news today that the LA Rams tried to get Khalil Mack, good Lord, could you have imagined that? Their defense is very good. I think Todd Gurley is very good. I think Robert Woods, I think, you know, and really it will be Brandon Cooks is the bigger question for me. Like, what does he bring? Can he be the guy? Can he be the number one? Because when you look at what you have in Jared Goff, I think he needs help. I think he's not a guy that you can say, you know, yeah, he's for sure the best quarterback. Because he's not. He is. Where does he fall in quarterbacks in the NFL? He's mid-pack on a really good team. Because if Jimmy Garoppolo hasn't proven anything, what has Jared Goff proven?
Yeah. I still think that Jared Goff is, again, still has more time on the field. He's still, I mean, honestly, like, this is my problem with Garoppolo. Just because you sat behind Tom doesn't make you good. He's shown us in a tiny sample size that he's good, right? Like, tiny sample size. Go out and contend for that division. Then we can talk.
Does it bother you that Jared Goff didn't at all play in the preseason?
No.
That doesn't bother you at all?
Nope. Not even a little bit.
He has not had a huge season yet. And this is only his third year, and your rookie year, you only play 7 games. Yeah, I get it. 3,800 yards last year. 28 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. Love those numbers. Completed 62% of his passes. Love those numbers. So his numbers, his metrics are pretty good. But he's one of those guys where I look at him and I'm like, what is missing here? Like, I need to see that.
I don't. I love his arm. I think he's got good instincts. I just think he's taking baby steps. You know, there's progression happening.
Well, I think they're a 12-win team is where I would go with them. And I could see them pushing. I could see them winning 10, 11 games. I could also see them winning 12, 13, 14 games. Like, they're that good. They could be that elite. I'm curious, though, exactly how they end up looking at, you know, that division. They should win the NFC West going away, right? Like, they should be no problem, right? So when they get that bye, let's say, and you're in amongst teams like New Orleans, who I think is a 11, 12, 13 win team. I think the Rams have to have that bye. Because if they wind up as a 12 win team and you have playoff matchups to now worry about, and you wind up playing a team like the Green Bay Packers in the wild card round, I don't want to play the Packers. I don't want to play the 49ers. I don't want to play the Eagles. Because those are the teams, like, really, if you think about the teams who should get the bye, it's probably the Vikings and the Rams.
Yeah.
Those are probably the two best teams. Now, obviously, the Saints are going to have something to say about that. The Eagles are going to have something to say about that. But I think the Rams cannot wind up in that playoff round or in the wild card round.
Yeah.
You have to put the Saints in the wild card round, in my opinion. You've got to have that bye to win. But here nor there. I love talking the NFL. I could talk the NFL all day long. I'm passionate about it. I'm super stoked that we're playing meaningful football tonight. Like, that really matters to me. And I think it just... I look at the betting lines. And I've gotten into this now, and this is something else I want to talk about. Do you ever look at point spreads? Do you ever look at over-unders? Do you ever look at...
No.
You never look at that stuff. I look at it all the time. I've really gotten into, in prepping to talk about the NFL season, like, win totals. Like, there are teams, I think the Bears are at 7.5. Is the line on the Bears, how many games they'll win. So are they going to win 7 or are they going to win 8? Because if you take them, if you take the over 7.5, you got to say that they're going to win 8 games.
Right.
If you take the under, you got to say, well, they're not going to win. They're going to win 7 or less. Like, those conversations that force you to look at a schedule and a mat, like, that's fascinating to me. It's always been fascinating to me. And I've gotten more into it this year. I don't know, probably because gambling's legalized. I'm not a huge gambler. I don't put a lot of my money out, but I love it. I love talking about it. I like looking at it. So
yeah.
You're not a guy that bets, though. You're not a guy that'll.
No, it's just not my thing. I don't enjoy it that much, to be honest with you.
I think it's going to explode. I think you're going to see...
Allegedly going to bring in the NFL, you know, like...
Billions.
$2.3 billion or something like that.
Yeah, you're going to see... I think you're going to see sportsbooks at stadiums. I think you're going to see, you know, like what VSiN's doing, the, you know, Vegas Stats and Information Network, what they're doing. Yeah, I mean, it's just listening to the score in Chicago today, Brent Musburger was on. He's the voice of the Raiders, but he's also involved with VSiN. He does a show with them every day on Sirius. Like... And you just hear them ticking up because people care. Like, sports fans care about lines. Sports fans put their money into their teams. And I love it. I do. Before we get to baseball, Tiger Woods shot a 62 today at the BMW.
I still have the same feeling.
Which
dominate
is to say,
early and lose it late. You know, that's where he is right now.
But doesn't that excite you, though?
It does excite me. I mean, look, I love watching him and everything, but I can't, you know, that doesn't excite me in a way where I'm like, wow, he's going to go out and win this tournament. No, I don't think he's going to go out and win the tournament.
Well, he's tied with Rory for the lead.
Right, after round one.
Yeah, truth. After round one. You're absolutely right. But
that's a nice round.
It's 8 under. Hell yes, that's a nice round.
But look. Dude, he's got to do it on Sunday. He's got to get back to that. You know, like, you got to get back to...
The red shirt's got to matter.
Yeah, dude. It's got to matter.
Well, I mean, this is the final... Isn't this the final...
I believe so.
...of the FedEx Championship? I love it. I personally love watching Tiger.
Let's be honest. If he goes out and wins this tournament, nobody's going to care who won the championship. Everyone's going to be talking about Tiger winning a tournament.
Yeah. I love it. I really do. And I think this week, by the way, Tony Finau's got to play well this week to make the Ryder Cup team. Because now you have Tiger and Phil are both on the Ryder Cup team. I think Tony Finau has to play well. And he shot well today. He shot a 2-under. So it'll just be interesting. I just thought I'd throw that out there. Tiger's playing well, and I'm excited about that. How about the San Diego Padres? Did you see what Francisco Mejia did tonight? Of course you did, because we watched him do it. He hit two bombs tonight. The Padres win. They dominate the Reds 6-2. But the conversations around the Padres now are, screw Austin Hedges, Francisco Mejia every single day behind the plate.
Right.
And I think this is a really, really dangerous conversation for the Padres. And I think Preller's got a really difficult decision to make here. I get that Francisco Mejia, 2-for-4, 4 RBIs, 2 home runs. I get it.
Bro, you've had 4 at-bats.
And Padre fans are off the rails for this guy. Padre fans are like, oh, Austin Hedges, see you later. The trade Austin Hedges crowd and the Austin Hedges sucks and can't hit fan clubs had a very good night tonight.
Listen, I can get down with an argument or just an opinion that says, hey, we're willing to take a step back defensively behind the plate if we're going to get that kind of offensive contribution and we're going to get something of value in return for Hedges. Okay, I can listen to that. I could even humor that. But the idea that you're saying that Austin Hedges, just sucks and
Mejia's better.
And dude, Mejia's had 4 at-bats in his entire life.
Can't hit.
Get over yourself.
But
dude.
Austin Hedges can hit. I'm amazed by it.
And here's the thing. Come back to us on Twitter and tell us we're idiots if 50 at-bats later, he's still, hitting like this.
Jonathan Holmes on Twitter, MrBrown_23, says, a defensive catcher who can't hit on a lineup that struggles to produce runs, I'll take the trade-off with Mejia. First of all, they're struggling to score runs this year, in a developmental year, where you've moved Will Myers around from first to right to left to right to left to third. Right? Where you...
Not left.
Where you... Thank you. Where you've had a revolving door at second base, and you didn't bring Arias up, and now Arias is up, and he's playing great defense, and he's hit a little bit. Right? Like, you have taken Villanueva, who at one point was in the Rookie of the Year conversation. He's been a zero on this club. Right? Like, he's just dead to rights now. And a guy that's got, 18 home runs or something stupid like that, just doesn't have a place on this club, right? And now you're talking about a revolving door of outfielders where you haven't even had Franchi Cordero, where you have a guy in Framil Reyes who hits 2 home runs and everybody wants to say he's the most valuable player on this team. And tonight, I think he was 0-for-4, struck out.
That's what I'm saying. We're seeing a pattern here, though. We're seeing a pattern.
Yeah.
Hey, let's come up real quick, hit 2 home runs, and all of a sudden we're a Rookie of the Year MVP candidate.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just not how it works. And I think, for the bro on Twitter, I mean, you got to understand, at some point, you have to humble yourself and say, hey, look, we're early on in this process. Mejia's had 4 at-bats.
Grand total of 4 at-bats.
No, we said 4, not 400.
4. 1, 2, not 1 or 2 or 3.
But 4.
Thank you, Zorg.
I understand why Padre fans are so gung-ho on Mejia. It's exciting to see home runs, at the Reds Park, which is a hitter's park. I get it.
Well, Jeff Pass in Yahoo Sports puts a tweet out, and he puts out a lineup. He says, Mejia catching, Hosmer at first, Urias at second, Tatis at short, third base to be determined, ? Manny Machado.
Mm.
Naylor in left, Margot in center, and Franchi in right. Trade bait of Myers, Renfro, and Hedges. Starters, Lucchese, Paddock, Allen, and Nix, with Gore, Weathers, and Morjan moving fast. The Padres are going to be very, very good sooner than people think. Well, thank you, because I've been saying that.
See, but I don't mind this right here. I can get down with the idea, okay, you want to trade Hedges because he has value and you want to put Mejia back there as a project. Okay, I can kind of get down with that because your pitchers still need a lot of time to develop. It's not like they're ready. Like, okay, I get it. But you can't just simply say, oh, well, Mejia hit 2 home runs and Hedges sucks. You can't do that. That's just not going
to
be good enough.
And then what do you say to a fan base who you've told you're going to build an organization around the pitching staff?
Yeah.
That you're Lucchese's and you're all of these guys that are here. Now, granted, tonight, Lauer, I thought was terrible tonight, by the way. No offense. I just thought Lauer was awful tonight. But what do you say to a fan base when you're like, oh, yeah, we're look at Paddock, look at Lucchese. And I think Lucchese's been unbelievable. But you haven't even, by the way, you haven't even had your best rotation because you have guys that are injured.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to talk about the fact that your best pitchers, Danilson Lamet, who is supposed to be your star, has been out all year with Tommy John. Nobody wants to talk about the fact that guy's a centerpiece, man. Nobody wants to talk about that. Tommy John surgery. I think you have so much. Look at Perdomo. Was a massive disappointment this year.
Yeah.
So you have all this pitching coming. Your best prospects, in my opinion, are your pitchers. You have to be able to say, well, look at Quantrill, who is doing very well for you. Allen and all these guys, and you're just willing to overlook that. And I don't understand that. Because I say you're overlooking it. When you say Austin Hedges is expendable, that tells you that you don't value defense behind the plate. And I can only point to my experience, which is Yadier Molina in St. Louis is the best example of this. Buster Posey in San Francisco. Buster came up ready to catch. His offense when he was a rookie was a complete surprise. The way he took the bat and just dominated, I don't think anybody believed that Buster Posey was going to be able to do that at the big league level right out of the gate, right? So much so that you're trying to get him out from behind the plate. I don't think he'll be a catcher next year, by the way, after this hip surgery. But you look at Yadier Molina, who I think is the perfect example. Yachty was a guy in 05, 06, 07 who just couldn't hit his weight. Like, I had many conversations with Tony La Russa about the fact that, hey, if this guy just get a hit now and then, as long as you frame, you receive, you throw guys out, like, that's what I need from you. And now, here we are 10 years later, and he's one of the best offensive catchers in baseball who's hitting for average, and he'll give you a little pop now and then. Austin Hedges is a guy who's having the best offensive year of his career, albeit limited because of the injuries. He's coming off of an 18 home run, 17 double season last year with 55 RBIs. The guy is capable of, in my opinion, hitting 20 to 25. He's capable of 75 RBIs. And he is the best defensive catcher in baseball, in my opinion, right now today. And you want to get rid of that guy when you have a pipeline of pitching coming. Yeah, it's a huge mistake. Yeah. In my opinion.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. I mean, we've covered this so much. I just Padre fans are thirsty.
Mejia's had 4 at bats.
They're thirsty, man. It's cool. I get it.
4.
What are they gonna say when he goes 0-for-20 in 10 days?
Yeah, but how are sure? But then how are you hanging on to Franmil Reyes, who so very painfully and clearly does not have a defensive position? Like, the guy's not a big league outfielder, and you love that guy, and you're hanging on to a guy like Hunter Renfroe. Oh, he can hit the ball out of the park, but he's an average outfielder. Like, you have a guy in Franchi Cordero who I think is much more valuable than Hunter Renfroe. You have a guy in Travis Jankowski's another folk hero, a Padre folk hero in Travis Jankowski. You're not married to this guy. He's having a great year. That's awesome. You have so much young talent in the outfield. Leverage it. And then there's the Cubs. So what did I say yesterday on this show? I'm not going to get emotional or up and down. The Cubs, they're going to be fine. I bought into your garbage about how they're going to win the division by 3-4 games. It'll be good. All right. Well, because I'm the 26th man on the roster, we go to Washington tonight. Oh, Kyle Hendricks he says 2 days ago, oh, I'm as dialed in as I've ever been. Feels great. Woohoo! No. 5 innings, 6 hits, 4 runs, 74 pitches in 5 innings. Gives up a huge home run to Mark Reynolds. Now, granted, one of those runs was earned. I want to be fair. But, like, he was up essentially the entire night, right? And then the bullpen comes in and blows the doors off of Washington. And we're in the, what is this, the ninth now, tied at 4. And I don't know what you get 3 runs off of Strasburg. 111 pitches in 5 2/3 innings. He had a good offensive night. Against Steven Strasburg, that's a really good night. So should I be worried about this team? Talk me off the ledge again.
Who leads the league in comeback wins? Who leads the league in comeback wins? Oh, that's
right. The Milwaukee Brewers?
The Cubs.
The St. Louis Cardinals.
Oh, by the way, they're tied 4-4 after being down 4-3. Oh, by the way, they're still winning the division.
Shut up, Jake. Can I please bathe in my negativity?
I'm not letting you be Eeyore over here. It's not happening.
Eloy Jimenez? Who?
Hello.
The top prospect the Cubs traded to the White Sox for Quintana?
They're the White Sox. Don't care about them.
The White Sox? Thank you.
Guaranteed low rate field. We get it.
Thank you.
I'm just not worried, man. Like I'm not. You obsess.
I do. I'm really worried about this club, and I would love to see them, you know, have quality at bats on a consistent basis.
As we watch Javi Baez swing at a ball foot outside,
you're watching it. I'm trying to not be distracted. I am trying to be level-headed about the Cubs, but it's outings like this.
He's playing the Nationals. They're a good offensive club. They're not an elite offensive club. They're not awful. Yeah, they traded Daniel Murphy to the Cubs. Like, yeah, the Nationals and the Cubs, they have relations, right? Yeah. The Nationals are a solid team. You know, you're gonna see them, you're gonna continue to see them. Like, I get that we're coming down to the end of the year, and yeah, I get that. But these two teams, these two teams are going to continue to see each other. You're gonna have nothing to stand on if they win this game.
What are you gonna do? What are you going to do? When it's like the last week of the season,
what did I say? They're going to win the division by 2
and
games.
And I'm losing my mind. 2 games. And I, you know, I have very little hair left now, but I'll 2 have none games. Then. What I am going to be unbearable. You realize?
And the best part is, even if they went out and win the World Series, you wouldn't celebrate. You just sit there on Twitter.
No, this second time, I will lose my frickin' mind. I will lose my mind if the Cubs win the World Series this year. I just really, I'd lose my mind. I would love to have it. But they're not a World Series team. I still think the Red Sox, and again, Chris Sale and David Price, but all things being equal, I think the Red Sox are the best team in baseball. So there you go. Hey, I want to get to a couple of non-sports topics because, well, I like talking about politics and whatnot. Do you know who Alex Jones is? You're a 24, soon to be 25-year-old millennial.
I know his name. I don't know, like, him.
So you've never seen InfoWars? You've never been to his website?
Nothing.
Nope. Okay, so Alex Jones essentially is the pot stirrer. He is a conspiracy theorist.
Okay, let's be honest. He's the guy that's got a massive shovel with a huge black kettle pot in his house.
Yes, he does. He is the ultimate, he just is a nut. And, like, his wife divorced him. He had an ugly public divorce where she talked about the fact that he was angry and he yelled all the time and his kids are scared of him and he doesn't believe this stuff. He tried to say in court that I was making it up, and his wife was like, no, you believe this stuff. Like, it's ugly. So he has been banned by Apple, Google via YouTube, because Google owns YouTube.
Yeah.
They banned him from YouTube. They banned him from Facebook. Spotify banned him, his audio. And now today, Twitter banned him as well, permanently. He has no access to those platforms.
Sure.
And it's because he pushes hate speech. He pushes bullying tactics. And the final straw, oddly enough, was in Washington, D.C., at the Capitol yesterday, where Jack Dorsey, the CEO of Twitter, and Sheryl Sandberg, one of the bigwigs at Facebook, were testifying about bullying and controlling hate speech on their platforms. Alex Jones got into an argument with Marco Rubio, the center from Florida.
Another upstanding individual.
Yeah, Marco. He's got, what does Donnie call him? Little Marco?
Yeah.
But what he did yesterday that got him banned from Twitter for life is he used their video platform, Periscope, which when we lived in the same house, you and I used to do this show on Periscope every day.
Right.
It's live streaming video. He live streamed Alex Jones, live streamed himself attacking a CNN media reporter who was covering the hearings.
Yeah.
And it was brutal, and it was ugly, and it was awkward. And Twitter said that was enough because he was insulting the guy. It was ugly. And Twitter said, yeah, we've warned you. That's a violation of our terms of service. You're banned. Okay, on the face of it, Alex Jones probably should be banned. He probably shouldn't have a platform to put out hate speech and say that. You remember the shootings at Sandy Hook? Of course you do.
Yeah.
Saying that though there were crisis actors and that didn't happen and the parents are
suing
him.
I've seen those conspiracies, but not from him.
Yeah. Yeah, well, he's one of the major guys pushing them.
Yeah.
And, of course, Alex Jones's message is, well, they're trying to silence me because I tell the truth. And everybody else who's of normal mind, of sane brain, has said, well, you know, look, you're not telling the truth. You're a hate speech pusher. So, on its face, yes, he should be banned. But as a guy who uses Twitter and Facebook and, you know, Apple and Spotify are distributors of ours, YouTube is something that we use extensively. And, you know, like all of these platforms we use.
Right.
Does it scare you at all? Does it make you say, wow, that's a lot of power that they have over content creators?
Well, I mean, yeah, they have power over content creator. I mean, they have power to ban people. But, I mean, it would scare me more if they were pushing, you know, certain people based on their own personal political views. I mean, that's just not happening. They banned this guy because of, you know, the idea that he's spreading hate in the world. I mean, I can get behind that. I mean, I understand that, like, that they have a responsibility. I mean, this is what we always talk about. This is what we talked about with, the Facebook hacking and all that.
Yes, absolutely.
They have a responsibility. So I think they were just coming through on that responsibility, and I'm fine with that. I don't think, like, our show, for example, they would never ban our show. Like, we're not violating terms of service
use hate speech. We don't, like, there's a bunch of things that we don't do that got banned. But it just, you know what went through my mind? And maybe fear is the wrong word, right? But I feel like that's a lot of power because, let's be honest, if we got banned from iHeartRadio, if we got banned from SoundCloud or Google or Apple, like, that would be a death knell for us.
Right.
Those are the guys that really push our product out. Stitcher's a big deal for us. It's one of those things where it just kind of woke me up. It just kind of said, this is a big deal. Alex Jones is a wingnut. Like, I have never listened to his show, but obviously I know who he is. And
yeah,
I don't mind that. It's one of those things you have to worry about. The final thing I want to talk about, because we do well over 1,000 downloads a month in San Francisco. And obviously, we used to live there. I worked at KGO 810 and KMBR. There's this little issue with Millennium Tower. You know Millennium Tower.
Mm-hmm.
Millennium Tower is a massive development in the south of Market District.
Yeah.
Downtown San Francisco. Mixed use, primarily a residential tower. And it is the home to really famous people. Joe Montana, Hunter Pence, Kevin Durant, Tom Perkins, Drew Houston lives in that building. Like, really powerful, famous people. Yeah, it's sinking and leaning. And it is a huge catastrophe. And this has been well documented, right? Like, this is one of those things where everybody knows about it. But it was no big deal because they were fixing it. And then 60 Minutes got involved. And they did this huge piece, and essentially investigations happened, and it comes out that the reason that the building is sinking and the reason that the building is tilting is because they did not sink their pilings into bedrock, which in San Francisco is a big deal. Well, you may know that the Bay Area has earthquakes. And yeah, you
just,
may
just
know
a little thing.
Yeah,
you know.
Like it is a big, big freaking deal. And when you have a building that's built on a concrete slab, and it's built on a 90-foot deep pad of concrete, and it's got pilings driven through that 90-foot pad. And the pilings are sitting in mud. They're not sitting on bedrock. So the building, Millennium Tower, is sinking and leaning. And today I bring this up because a window on the 36th floor exploded today. It cracked. And that tells you that the building is shifting even more. What do you do? Because these things are multi-million dollar units. Like condos in there, penthouses are millions of dollars. What do you do? Like, I don't know that there's anything, because there's lawsuits, by the way, like lawsuits all over the place. No, it's your fault. No, it's not. It's your fault. It's your fault. It's his fault. It's hers fault. Right? Like the HOA, there's a huge HOA in that building. They're suing everybody. If you own a condo in there, like, are you still there?
Hell no.
I'm not. I left. And the original owners of the condos in that building have either sold or a lot of them have just abandoned the building. And now, today, a large crack in a window at Millennium Tower. And now they've closed the sidewalks around the building on Mission Street, which is I've walked past this building hundreds and hundreds of times. It's terrifying. Like, I don't know that you can sue enough to fix this problem.
No. There's no suing a building falling over, right? Like, there's no... one day, I'm just telling you, one day that building is going to fall over if you do nothing about it. Like, one day it'll just happen.
Yeah.
The window is just the beginning.
The city has asked the builder to look at the exterior walls of the building and make sure that they're structurally sound.
What do you mean? Look at the walls, dude. The walls aren't going to keep the building from falling down.
Oh, man. Last year, Millennium officials and Curtain Wall Design Consulting, the company that designed and installed the exterior walls of the building, they are all fighting each other over alleged defects. And in 2016, while investigating a tenant's complaint that strange odors in her unit were coming from somewhere, an architectural engineer found portions of the building's curtain walls, the wall panels on the outside, had shifted. And so there were cracks in the... I would leave the building.
Yeah.
I don't know that I could walk away from my investment for $2 million, but I would not be living in that building.
Nope.
It's absolutely terrifying. She paid $3.8 million.
Why would you live in the Bay Area? You've had the issues with the bridge. Now we're having issues with the building.
Yeah, the new Bay Bridge that was built with faulty Chinese steel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was twisting and bending.
Sure, yeah, let's go over that bridge every day.
Yeah, the one that collapsed in the 89 earthquake.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Bay Bridge that they replaced with the new one. And the new one was built with faulty steel. Oh, my God. Like, that's... because I love the Bay Area. I loved living in San Francisco. It's hellaciously expensive. We lived in the East Bay. We lived in Walnut Creek because we couldn't afford to live in the city. I would love to live in downtown San Francisco. Would love to. But I can't afford it. I don't think I'll ever be able to afford it. And I'd like to think that I have tens of millions of dollars left to make in my lifetime. I still won't be able to afford it. Because it's just so... you didn't enjoy living there?
I would enjoy living downtown, but I didn't enjoy living there that much.
Yeah, well, I think when they put that Warriors new arena in there, I think it's going to be spectacular. By the way, let's end with talking about sports tattoos. How about that? A Eagles fan got a Carson Wentz tattoo where he's pantless, only wearing a jock strap. He has really hairy, ugly legs. Your thoughts, Jake?
No, I'm good. I'm out. I'll pass.
Would you get a sports tattoo? Would you get like
a team? I would get a logo. I wouldn't get anybody's face. Or
Kevin Durant's face?
No. Like, I would get his jersey.
Tim Lincecum?
I would do a jersey. No, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do anybody's face. It's not about it.
My face? Not even my
no.
face? You would, really?
No.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Yeah, that Carson Wentz tattoo is on my Twitter feed, The Monty Show. MONTY, The Monty Show. Until tomorrow, America. Say goodbye, Jake.
Goodbye, Jake.